Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Our guest today is William A. Scheman, Chief Executive Officer of Metris Group. Dr. Scheman and his colleagues have consulted extensively with many major corporations on the development and implementation of business strategies, employee and customer measurement, strategy operations alignment, productivity and quality improvement, cost containment, strategic acumen of employees at all levels, culture change, and mergers and acquisitions. He is co-author of Bullseye, Hitting Your Strategic Targets Through High Impact Measurement. He's also written extensively for many publications, including Across the Board, Journal of Business Strategy, Management Review, and Quality Progress. Bill, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Well, let's go right to the heart of the matter. Your new book is entitled Reinventing Talent Management, About People Equity. What is people equity and why is it important?
If you think about the current and the potential value of your workforce, people equity boils down to three factors: alignment, capabilities, and engagement. Is everyone rowing together on the ship and are they doing it synchronously? That's the alignment factor. Capabilities, do we have the talent, information, and resources needed to delight our customers? And third, engagement. Do we have people who are real advocates for the organization? Not just satisfied, because a lot of people are just kind of satisfied with their job, but are they really willing to go out and recommend people to come work here, recommend the products? And if it's a public company, would they be willing to recommend people to pull out their wallets and invest?
Are there specific metrics associated with these things?
Any one of these we can measure. And we typically have found now over about 10 years of experimentation that surveys are probably the best method because we can ask questions and calibrate them on alignment, capabilities, or engagement. That allows us to then go and correlate that with business outcomes. So for example, in a study we did with American Society for Quality with about 1,000 organizations a couple of years ago, we found that if you were in the top quartile, top 25% of companies in people equity, you were about 78% likely to be the top third in your industry in quality. You'd have a 67% chance of being that top third in financial performance. And you were less likely to lose employees, about 10% less turnover of employees in those high people equity organizations. Now, that may sound like, well, gee, 10%, but in this average organization, that was about $17 million to the bottom line.
Right. Bill, even in this downturn, as we're passing through this rough time in the economy, some companies just seem to have gotten this human resource thing right. What do you see that makes them stand apart?
The short answer is leadership. Smart leaders do things that sustain advantages of their workforce, even during troubled times. Many of the leaders that I interviewed in putting together the new book, Reinventing Talent Management, even in the darkest hours of the recession, still think and talk about their plans for emerging from the recession and what they need to do with talent to make that happen. They view and act like adversity is just a temporary thing. And that translates to their communications, their confidence that people see, and how they deliver messages, and also to their behaviors. They don't act like victims. They really do act like people who can drive change. Mm-hmm. If you think about something like engagement.
Yeah.
Most of those organizations tend to hold on to the best employees as they come out of the recession because of those behaviors. They seem to be very focused on their customers, riveted to that. That's a rallying cry to bring everybody together during a tough time. And the last thing that I'd highlight is how they approach the reduction of costs. Most of these leaders use labor as the last resort. They try to get their people to think about other ways they could become effective. And using talent is sort of the last thing that they
have the staff and the combined brain power work on solving the cost issues rather than say, well, sorry, got to cut budget.
And in the interviews I conducted, it was interesting. The top leaders were concerned about when we come out of the recession, how do we recreate the knowledge if we just lay people off? We're going to have huge knowledge gaps. How long did it take us to really get top performers?
Right.
Big issue.
You talked about these companies that have nailed the human resource piece of this, talking about the future. What do you find is the most meaningful forward-looking time frame?
Are you talking about their planning time horizon?
Yeah.
Typically, today, everything has moved so quickly. With the speed of technology and change, it's difficult to have people think beyond 3 years.
Right.
We used to do strategic planning back in the early 90s, and people were in 10-year time frames. Today, it's 3 years. Mm-hmm. And it's hard sometimes to get the executives to think beyond the current year because they're worried about what competitors are doing and what the market's doing in very short time frames.
How often do they revisit those plans? Throughout the year or at the conclusion of the year?
I think the annual review is still the most common, but we're starting to see the leaders move to a cycle where planning is not a stop-start event, but it actually is a continuous activity. So what we're saying is organizations, for example, that have used balanced scorecards or strategic scorecards, coming back quarterly, and they're having these review meetings, and they're looking at what are the critical things on my scorecard that represent my strategy that are changing, and do we need to adjust the plan now as opposed to waiting to the end of the year?
Right, right. Now, for this book, you've interviewed over 70 executives and thought leaders. During the course of those interviews, what has been your biggest personal aha moment?
During the course of the study, we actually ended up with a very natural, unplanned experiment in which we did about half the interviews before the sky fell with the economy. So we had great, robust, oh my goodness.
So you had like almost a control group.
It was almost like a control group, exactly. And here we had about half of them, how are we going to get talent? And then half of them when everything was collapsing. Mm-hmm. What's interesting about that, I guess there's a few key observations. One is leaders continued to worry about leadership talent. As they started losing some senior executives, maybe encouraged some of them out because they were the higher paid people, were near retirement, they realized they didn't really have talent ready to take their place.
Right.
That was one of the big ahas, that they need to continue to accelerate succession plans.
Very interesting.
And there had been a mindset in the 90s that we can just go out and buy it.
Uh-huh.
What they realized is that strategy hasn't worked as well. A lot of people abandoned a lot of development programs. They're coming back to that and realizing that we need a hybrid between the 50s, where we maybe planned and developed people for 15 years, and unfortunately they left after 13 years and all that investment disappeared, and not doing anything and just thinking you can buy it off the street.
Oh, yes.
That was one of the big ahas. I think the other one is a recognition that top talent always has a choice. Even in bad times, your top salespeople, your top R&D people, they're the lifeblood of the organization.
They can walk whenever they like.
They can walk when they want. And what are we doing proactively to really manage that? I think that was another major aha.
Right. Bill, in discussions with these senior executives, you've come across strong positive role models for effective talent management. Do you feel comfortable calling out one of these executives and letting us know what makes this person especially effective?
One of the people that stands out is Gary Ridge, who's the CEO of WD-40.
Okay.
Gary told me that 78% of U.S. households have a WD product somewhere in their house. But what amazed me is that they're getting over $1.25 million in revenue per employee. I said, what is this organization doing differently to achieve those kinds of numbers? And one of the things that struck me is Gary's style, his leadership.
Can you give us some examples?
Gary will respond to email to any employee within 24 hours, any employee in the company, and they're all over the globe. He answers his own telephone. He is very approachable. He takes trips frequently, and he walks around and just talks and listens to people to get their ideas. What was very interesting about Gary's is my job in the leadership team is to help every employee get an A.
Yeah.
So what do you mean get an A? He says, well, think about your performance appraisal.
Yep.
It's our job to enable them to do that and to remove barriers. If they're not getting an A, then something we're not doing right.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't really focused correctly. That model is so different than the traditional normal curve where we can only expect 10% to be outstanding and everybody else is in the middle and we got some laggards.
Mm-hmm.
That model leads people to build systems,
right,
pay systems and everything that basically drive mediocrity.
Exactly. Well, now that we've talked about a good role model, what big mistakes do you see executives and supervisors making in managing talent?
Probably the biggest mistake is trust. Trust is such a fragile thing in an organization.
Hmm.
The cultures that I'd say are really, truly outstanding seem to have high trust environments. We do focus groups with employees or managers, and there's a trust in belief in what they can expect of their leaders. Leaders have it of the employees. They know people will pull together at the right moment. And a lot of it's based on honesty, open communication, willingness to share the good and bad, and not sugarcoat everything, but it's easy to destroy.
That's definitely true.
And yet the outstanding leaders like Henry Givray at Smith Buckland or Gary Ridge at WD-40 seem to focus constantly on making sure that they're creating, keeping a high trust environment.
Mm-hmm. I'm just kind of curious what your perspectives are as it relates to global corporations and multicultural teams. A company headquartered in North America has a different executive orientation, perhaps, and different way of incenting and a different way of leading than even a lot of its subsidiaries, offices, or factories around the world. What are your thoughts on that?
In terms of how they're different?
Exactly. What the human resource concerns are or should be?
I think we're going to be back very, very shortly, sooner than people really expect, to big wars for talent again.
Right.
China is growing dramatically. I mean, when I was in China recently, there was an issue there of, we're recruiting talent from India. We're going to be pulling it. There's a lot of American belief, for example, and even Western Europe, that India is producing a huge number of technical degrees and we're going to have a great labor source. I think they've underestimated the pull that's going to happen from China, from Korea, from other Asian countries right now for that same talent. And there isn't enough in some of those sciences, in medical professions. Nursing's already a crisis area for critical care nursing to provide that talent.
So what should organizations do?
People who are smart right now are working on their employer brand. What is it about our company that's going to attract not only good talent, but also some of the new Gen Ys that are coming out? What do they want, and how are we going to get that limited share of the mindset?
So you see a future where some really competent talent, new graduates, young people coming out of college, would seriously consider careers or tours of duty in China or India or wherever the need might be.
I think they're more flexible. They're looking for growth opportunities to a much greater extent than we've seen in a long time. Everybody wants growth that's underestimated, but they truly are looking for that. They're looking for the resume development. And the world is open to them now to really pursue those options. We're going to see an environment in which some of the best talent like that is really going wherever the opportunities are. But they're going to be demanding environments that say, give me flexibility. I want some work-life balance. I want to be able to do the work, but I want to be able to get it done in a flexible way. And organizations that are rigid are going to die.
We've been speaking to William Scheman, author of the book Reinventing Talent Management. Bill, thanks for being with us today on Edgewise.
It was great to be with you, David. Thank you.
It would be great to hear your feedback on this program. So please drop us an email note at podcast@amanet.org or call us at 800-697-3406. That's 800-697-3406. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.